It's Jared Whateley. Thanks for listening to the podcast. This public holiday Monday, we started with the proposition that Winx and the Autumn Sun simply must race. Anthony Mithen, who's an owner, a breeder and a broadcaster, had his say. David King ran the rule over JLT2 and the little kinks that have been observed through the pre-season. Jonathan Manasso gave us the story of becoming the ambassador for grunts in the All-Star Mile. Robert Craddock, well, it was an extraordinary performance from Australia in India across the weekend, and it reshaped the cricket conversation while AFLW is coming to its thrilling conclusion. Kate Sheehan brought us up to speed. Get in touch with the program at any time, whateley@sen.com.au. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. The all-new BMW X5. Now at Doncaster BMW. Monday morning. This is your town. This is your station. This is Whateley on SEN.
Good morning. Right now, racing has what every sport craves. The undisputed champion and the universally recognised number one contender. If only racing knew what to do about it. In all that happened this weekend, there was nothing quite so freakish as the performance of the Autumn Sun in the Randwick Guineas. Left 10 lengths astern coming to the turn, the bubble was about to burst on the Spruik Colt of the turf. Visually, it seemed impossible to make up the ground. And it might have occurred to you, as it did me, that there was only one horse in this country who could win from such a position, and she was happily resting at home. And then the Autumn Sun did this.
McAvoy hard at work at the Autumn Sun. At least 10 off the lead as they straighten up. Miss Fabulous has had her fun. And Fundamentalist and Vega Day storm to the front now at the 250. Five clear from Nikita Jane. The Autumn Sun. Boy, you'll have to be good to win from there. It's Fundamentalist in front from Vega Day's Nikita Jane. The Autumn Sun is lifting late. Fundamentalist in front. The Autumn Sun's really surging. The outside. Yes. Oh, what a super win. The Autumn Sun got up to beat Fundamentalist.
Oh, what a super win, all right. You could hear the naysayers at the 400. We told you he wasn't that good. They were thankfully drowned out in the cheering and the gasping that ensued. The Son of Redoute's choice is as rare as he is precocious. It's beyond doubt now that he's the second best horse in the country. And the role of the contender is to challenge the champ. And there's just a hint that Chris Waller knows it too.
The obvious reasons will be the possible clash of Winx, and I'm not going to swerve away from it. The one thing I will say is the Autumn Sun's a three-year-old. Winx didn't get to her best until she was five. So is it fair to put a horse like him up against supposedly the world's best or the best in Australia? Be great if they could hang around a little bit longer. And who knows? I'll have a good talk to the owners, which ultimately make the decision. I'll advise them my side of things, and then they'll come up and let everybody know the same day.
So listening to that, it occurs to me that what Waller needs is some encouragement. But I tell you where he won't get it. He won't get it from racing people. Here's a sample of what's going on when they talk about the prospects of Winx and the Autumn Sun.
You know, the race is the Queen Elizabeth, and unfortunately that's where Winx is going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe he goes to the Randvet and Winx goes to the George Ryder. They'll keep the two horses apart. They won't race against each other.
And that's the industry talking. The industry Les Carline grew to despise. The industry that measures everything in ratings and sectionals and benchmarks. The industry that assures itself that everything is all right because gambling revenue continues to rise, mistaking the national addiction to the punt for an affection for the sport. The industry that prioritises the first $16 million in stud fees over returning as a four-year-old and winning the Cox Plate to properly fill out a champion's CV. The industry that thinks made-up races for the uber-rich to own a horse for a day in the Everest and graffiti the Opera House, or throwing millions at the odd star and hotchpotch mile, is what racing really needs. The industry that thinks about everything except the horse. When did racing lose its ambition? When did racing lose its sense of competition? When did racing forget about the best against the best? when did racing become so damn miserable? Winx versus the Autumn Sun would be the greatest event on turf in more than three decades. Not since Bone Crusher and Waverley Star in the 86 Cox Plate would there have been a match race like it. And think how that panned out. The race of the century.
Here's the two mighty New Zealanders at the 700. Waverley Star's taken the lead from Bone Crusher. Two lengths away, Drought. On the fence, Romanata Society Bay. A length to Tristram, Aberready Dandy Andy. Drawn coming off the fence from Tristram. Bone Crusher's under the whip and Waverley Star's drawn a half to three quarters in front of him. Two away, Drought. Two to Drawn, Dinky Flyer. Waverley Star's about three quarters to Bone Crusher. They're both under the whip. Four lengths to Drought. Then Drawn and Dinky Flyer on the turn. These two mighty chestnuts, Waverley Star a long neck. The Bone Crusher draws level. Three to Drought running on the Filbert. Bone Crusher's taken the lead from Waverley Star. The Filbert running on. The Bone Crusher a neck in front. Waverley Star comes at him. 50 to go. Bone Crusher and Waverley Star. They're going to hit it together. Bone Crusher and Waverley Star. The Bone Crusher. The greatest race I've ever seen. A half head to Waverley Star and three to the Filbert.
The greatest race I've ever seen, said Bruce. Then there was Bone Crusher versus Attilac and Bone Crusher versus Vorogue and Bone Crusher versus Bozam in front of the Queen. That's how they used to do it. The best that racing could be. Look at the sporting calendar for 2019. Djokovic versus Nadal was a dud. There's the Ashes, the Cricket World Cup, the Rugby World Cup, the FIFA Women's World Cup, the President's Cup. There isn't a singular moment on that calendar that could match Winx versus the Autumn Sun. This is what racing needs, and this is what racing has at hand. Sure, there are those who think the three-year-old can't win, but that's mere opinion and supposition. And as for the idea of not wanting to end the Cinderella story, not wanting to be the party pooper, when has that ever been part of sport? Come one, come all, take your shot at the title. We like to think of our favourite horses in this country with a human edge. I think the Autumn Sun, if he could talk, he's Clubber Lang.
Don't get a sucker, no statue. Give him guts. I told you I wasn't going away. You got your shot. Now give me mine. And why don't you tell all these nice folks why you've been ducking me? I am ranked number one. One! That means I'm the best. But this bum been taking the easy matches, fighting other bums. I'm telling you and everybody here, I'll fight him anywhere, anytime, for nothing. But you people are never going to see that happen because he's going to retire.
Because he's going to retire. All the lessons in life are contained in Rocky III. For those who can't see it, think about this. What would Vince McMahon do? She searched the world for a worthy contender and found him in the box next door. As the sun sets on the greatest racing story ever told, her greatest threat emerges. The promotions write themselves. There are badges and flags and banners and T-shirts and caps. A captive nation, a racing event to stop the sporting world. If Chris Waller is looking for encouragement, look beyond the racing folk who seem to have forgotten how great their sport can be. Look to Charlie Fellows in England who tweeted, "Dear Mr. Waller, please, please give the world the race it wants and run Winx against the Autumn Sun." Please do, Chris Waller. It'll be the race for the ages. 1-300-736-736 to enlist. You can text 0433-98-1116. Cricket. Gee, there's some good cricket that Australia's played. We'll get to that shortly. Robert Craddock's on this morning. Footy. Bloodless. That's what JLT 2 was. David King's in to run the means test. There's some basketball as well. 1-300-736-736 on this public holiday. So I'm just a sports fan. I love racing. I'm not involved. I'm not an owner. I'm not a breeder. So I don't have as much at stake as others do. I just love the sport. Anthony Mithen lives both sides of this, and he's part of the team on Moody on the Mic. And Pete, curiously, is one who absolutely thinks this shouldn't happen, having taken the greatest gamble that we've seen in recent racing when he took Black Caviar gloriously to Royal Ascot. Mitho, welcome.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me. Yeah, well, Pete's no romantic, is he?
No, although when his moment came, he was as misty-eyed as anyone.
He was. And he did dare to dream and take on the world and race his beautiful horse in front of the Queen. But I fear that this won't happen. I have to be a dampener on this, but I would love to see it happen. It would be amazing to see two great horses and horses of the calibre we haven't seen in a while, and one at the twilight of her days and one just rising through the ranks. But unfortunately, they are just shooting stars, aren't they, these colts that hit the racetrack and get those Group 1, all-important Group 1 victories and show their class. They're off to stud before we can blink. So I fear that that's probably going to be the case and they'll be kept separated. But there are two options coming up on Golden Slipper Day where they could clash. The Ryder Stakes or the Randvet, one over 1,500 metres and one over 2,000 metres, and all balls are currently in the air.
So let me troubleshoot this a little bit with you. The Autumn Sun's price is fixed. He has won the Caulfield Guineas, the size-making race, and then, dazzlingly, the Randwick Guineas. Surely the only way for him to be worth more is to be the only horse who could beat Winx. And he can't possibly be worth less, having done what he's done in those three-year-old races.
And I've got no doubt that that is what we will be rattling in John Massara's brain yesterday, today, and probably for the week ahead while they make a decision on what to do next. I mean, that was just an extraordinary win on Saturday to see that horse come from. I said at the corner when they straightened to the people I was watching with, well, he's going to finish closer to the last than first. And with 200 metres to go, I thought he couldn't, could he? And on the line he did. And I'm sure that the team at Arrowfield would have looked at that win and thought, well, that is so dazzling that even it transcends just racing people, doesn't it, a race like that, when a horse wins like that. It's shared on social media. It's spoken about at the pub with your mates, even if you're not into racing. Did you see that horse, the Autumn Sun, on the weekend? So I wonder whether that might just tick the box that has this horse reach another level and reach almost household name status for the team at Arrowfield and have them say exactly what you just mentioned. Could he be the horse that beats Winx? The only thing against that is that Chris Waller is absolutely determined beyond anything else in his racing life to make sure that that horse, Winx, takes her rightful place in the broodmare paddock with an undefeated run to her name. We know she was defeated early in her career, but he does not want to see her go out on a low after all she's done for him, his family, his stable and his business. So it's a tricky one for Chris because obviously he trains both of them, but the two horses are owned differently.
One last great bout. The great sporting figures do it. It wasn't the lesson of last week that having the challenge thrown down was far better than the procession when Happy Clapper served it up to her, even though she's beaten Happy Clapper over and over and over. Is you can protect the horse into retirement, can't
you? You can. And there was a theory running around Flemington for those in the know that maybe that run against Happy Clapper had taken more out of her than any of her previous 25, 30-odd runs, that there was just the hint that maybe we'd seen her for the last time. That was just a hint. I wouldn't like to say that it was speculation as fact, but there was talk from those that have watched a lot more races than you and I that it did take its toll, and maybe the time was right to set her free to the broodmare paddock. So that'll be interesting to see. I doubt it's the case, and I'm sure she'll run on Golden Slipper Day, but it'll be interesting to see which race they choose, whether it be the 1,500 metre rider or the 2,000 metre Randvet, and then what they do with Autumn Sun. But I just think with everything at stake for all Chris has done for the Autumn Sun, I think that John Nasara would probably err on the side of let's keep them apart, let's respect Chris's decision to keep Winks a winner until the until retirement days. Unfortunately, that mouth-watering clash I can't see happening.
So with the Autumn Sun, Mitho, and all that's at stake financially, is his CV, and this has been the recent trend, is three-year-olds, they dominate their three-year-old season. Yep. They try for one, wait for age, win on the way out, and then they don't return as four-year-olds, and thus they never have the champion's CV. Is the Autumn Sun should race on to run in a Cox Plate, but I take it that the way these things have happened in Australian racing in recent time is to prioritise the breeding rather than the racing, and we're the losers yep. out of that.
Yeah, and I read with interest and was heartened by the fact that there were comments after the race on Saturday that there was contemplation for a Cox Plate, which would mean he would race on at four and not hit the breeding barn in September. So that was encouraging because I had thought it was the lay-down Mazzia that he would go off to stud, and Arrowfield have paid a lot of money. They interestingly, the story of this horse is that Arrowfield bred this horse in partnership with the Aga Khan, sold it to Hermitage Bloodstock, which is a Hong Kong-based racing outfit. They've raced the horse for the first, I think, up until the Golden Rose it was. He'd won a Group 1 at 2. He won the Golden Rose at 3, so he's ticked the Group 1 box at 2 and 3. Arrowfield came in for a sizable amount of money and bought half the horse, and controlling interest in the horse led to believe that somewhere around $40 million valuation of the horse. And for that sort of investment, you really need to protect it going to stud and maximise stud revenues. But when you've got one as good as this, I think you don't need to rush. You rush off to stud. He's won four Group 1 races now. He's clearly the most explosive miler we've seen in a long time. And the Hong Kong Hermitage Bloodstock have long been of the belief, well, they wanted to win the Derby. So when this horse started his three-year-old career and won the Golden Rose, the talk was that he was going to go to the Derby. That all changed when the big stud deal got done after the yeah. Golden Rose, because Australian breeding wants to see sprinter milers. You know, we are determined to only breed our mares to sprinter milers, wrongly or rightly, but that's the commercial trend. So John Nasara stepped in and managed the program and said, well, we'll keep him just to those mile races. But now that he's sort of done that, been there, done that, maybe they can stretch him out, take him to a Cox Plate and have the complete package, a horse that won Group 1s at 1,400, 1,600 and maybe 2,000 metres. So we might get our moment in the sun with the Autumn Sun in the spring on Cox Plate Day. But unfortunately, Winks will be long in foal by then, I would suggest.
Good on you, Mitho. Thanks for your insights.
Good on you.
The Monday Means Test with David King as we run the rule over JLT2. Hello, Kingy.
Morning, Jared. I've got to get something off my chest, yep. off the top with you. I mean, I get a lot of questions when you work at Fox and you work with some of the bigger names in football. The most common question I get is, what's Robbo like?
Yes.
And then the second question is, what's Jared like?
Right.
Now, I find it very hard to support you when vision reaches me. Have you at the NBL with your boss on Sunday?
Yes.
And I'm really disturbed by this. A man of your age was using one of those clappers.
The clappers.
You can't, Jared.
Can't use a clapper.
But you're too old for a clapper.
Well, it's better than the thundersticks.
No.
So there are two choices. It's either the clapper
ideas.
Or the thundersticks.
You shouldn't be thundersticking or clapping right. with the clapper. How'd you get hold of a clapper?
Well, they're on your seat.
They're for the kids, Jared.
Well, those aren't kids' seats, and they're on the seat.
Do you feel, in hindsight...
So I was there with one of my children, in fairness.
Did you allow them to use the clapper?
She used the clapper.
Yeah.
So I'm just there.
Did you
support it?
Did you share it?
One each.
One each.
The one thing about the clapper, so you have to join the noise,
you don't
right?
have to use the clapper. You can join the noise.
But when the game's at stake, I do put the clapper down because it's much more satisfying to actually do it yourself. The din is the clapper.
The what?
The din is when you're just adding to the din.
Oh, right.
But when you're actually involved, it's fist pumping and clapping.
Well, I feel like your boss, Hutchie's a little bit responsible for this. He's dragged this emotion out of you that you don't normally have. You're normally a very reasoned person.
Clappers
are not for you. Too old for a clapper, Jared.
Take that on board.
good fun. What did you like the weekend?
I thought it was bloodless. Not that I didn't like it. So okay. I thought if we hadn't had it, we'd be no less prepared. That's probably my view. Is it looked to me like the clubs more or less went through the motions.
Yeah.
I couldn't see anything. I saw more in the first weekend than I did this weekend. Clubs sort of, there were clearly teams who were picking and choosing periods of the game. Obviously, Richmond were only vaguely interested until the scoreboard offered a challenge and then they clicked into gear and did their thing. Melbourne were in and out of their game with sort of all care, no responsibility, yeah. Maybe not even all care. So I am increasingly becoming a believer that maybe we should just behind the curtain till round one. And I'm not sure the clubs could mount a compelling argument. If that's what the JLT is now, I'm not sure whether it's actually necessary.
Well, it serves its purpose though, doesn't it? I don't think anyone's unhappy with it.
No. And I'm not either. Was bloodless.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Just a couple of things to point out. So we're all talking about scoring over the last, 5 years, just on the decline. So let's compare JLT 2019 mm-hmm. to JLT 2018. Because I think that's all we can do. A lot of people are getting angry with us talking about the season proper last year and comparing numbers, and that's a fair call too. But last year in the JLT series, 420 goals. This year, 449 with one game to come today. So that's a big spike.
Yes.
And most of that, there's been a 24 goal increase from centre bounces. So most of the increase is from centre bounces. And I think, If there's nothing else that we take out of the JLT except for getting vindication that what we've done at the centre bounces is correct, well, then it's a complete success.
Yep.
It's a result. So, there's a lot of talking points out of the weekend and we'll get to those, but if that was our purpose, then, and maybe there's an avenue for coaches to, put their spin and their flair and all that sort of thing on it, and maybe it's too soon for that, but I think we'd have to say, yep, tick.
So 100-plus scores outstanding in a shortened form of the game. Wild fluctuations, which look great, and I suspect marry up with what coaches are saying, is if you get control in the middle, if you lose control in the middle, it's going to be incredibly difficult to halt momentum. So I don't know the answer to this, but if there are tactics, we haven't seen them yet, which I sort of like, and I guess that was the I thought we might see more this weekend on that front, and we didn't see any of it. So that, I suspect, offers great intrigue for round one, which is sort of what I'm all about.
Do you feel as a viewer, I've found this, I don't know whether others share this, but you feel like you can't miss a centre bounce?
Mm.
If you're doing something, or we'll be going to, most people will be watching it and go to an ad break and they'll come back. And
don't put the kettle on.
Don't be late.
No.
You'll miss a potential, brilliant bit of play or a highlight or a score, and you might go back for another ad. So you might be at the kettle twice here. But I feel like there's a sense of urgency and importance now about the centre bounces. So that's a real positive.
The other thing that has been a positive is to identify a problem. The double 50-metre penalty is clearly a problem. So it has you at your wit's end, which I think we experienced with Port Adelaide and North.
It's crazy.
Fingers crossed for Paddy Ryder as Campbell put in a good leap, and he was nudged out of it as well by Westhoff. That's 50, so we can have a shot at goal, the former Bulldog.
So he should push up and get Paddy. He's got to go too. He's in the zone.
100.
It's a beauty.
No, that's ridiculous. This is
everyone's getting sucked in because they don't know the rule.
What are we watching? This is ridiculous.
Well, we don't make him.
We don't make them. There we go.
Yeah. Explain and effect.
The bloke who does will be on the phone again in 5 minutes. But that's crazy.
Ridiculous and crazy. It's early in the year to be there. So it's jarring.
Jarring.
So whose responsibility is it? Is it the AFL's responsibility or is it the player's responsibility to get with the program? Because you can watch this happening and go, don't run there.
Oh. But we had three events on Saturday. So it was a quite a peculiar afternoon, really. So the first one was paid, okay, letter of the law, no drama. The Sean Higgins one was the first one, where he actually, to use your racing terms, he was headed at the clock tower by whoever got the 50 who took off. Darcy Byrne-Jones, I think it was. And then he ran back and got in front, but he stayed 2 metres lateral.
Yes.
And he wasn't impeding at all. And it just looks silly that we've all of a sudden, now we're off to the races, And there was one later in the day where Jack Zeeble got a 50-metre penalty and he was pushed twice on the way down to setting of the mark, and there was no course to answer there. So I'm at a loss, but I didn't realise it was such a problem at all. Have we ever had an issue with an original 50-metre penalty?
No.
And so,
why are we fixing something?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to speak for them because it's not my idea or anything, but
so
the idea is to
opinion,
move though. The game as quickly as possible. If you want to take advantage, get going and take advantage.
But that's okay. I mean, we asked the umpires to make a call on every facet of the game. Why can't they just make a call that if the player is trying to impede or hold the recipient of the 50, it's trying to hold him up in any way, pay another one. Warn him, pay him another one.
That's the middle ground.
It'll come back to that.
The middle ground is Higgins was in no way impeding the play. Now, if Burn Jones takes off to his right and Higgins tackles him, pay another 50. I've got no issue with that. You shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
So there is a middle ground in there. I hope we don't enter round one just with the hardcore 50 on 50.
Because that's not what we want
separating
games.
Well, it's a goal
games.
Every time.
You don't want it separating games. And you know, we want more scoring, that sort of stuff, but we can't manufacture artificial scoring. It still has to have, you know, the look of the game.
Yep.
It just looked crazy. And Jack Riewoldt was probably the best at it on the weekend.
Yep.
He knew how to draw a 50 or 100. And then he knew what to do when it was the reverse.
So there is, and in that, so we say the players don't know the rules. Well, Jack does. Jack knows inside out and backwards how that works because he knows
he's
how to
forward.
Draw it.
He's a forward.
Yeah.
Forwards think like that, Jerry.
Can we just get all the players here? Once you get headed at the clock tower, you're out, mate. There is no northerly here. You don't fight back.
No.
Once you're headed at the clock tower, you're out. Tag out. Anyway, but
so
it
needs
is jarring.
Change,
I'm...
Yeah. You with me?
So I'm in the middle ground. The middle ground is, let's just get back to, if you're impeding, it's another, and if you're not impeding,
everyone's happy with that, I think.
Yeah.
Even the players are happy with that. The players can understand that. And maybe you say you can't be within 2 or 3 metres. I mean, if they're getting twos aside.
Yeah. What if the umpire running back goes, you're out, Sean, you're out.
Yep.
And if Sean's silly enough not to listen to that, then it's all on him. But once you go, right, I'm out here, so buzz off.
Yeah, and I've heard the counter argument since that it's a rule now. The players just need to handle it.
Yeah,
and that's okay. But it's just another thing.
Let's not go into round one with that.
I don't think it's an adjustment we need. And you've got to look at these things, and that's why we've got this JLT series. So we like that we've had a look at it, but we don't like what it's done.
This was Ross Lyon on the overall and the particulars of the rules.
I think the biggest impact that is positive for the game is the 6-6-6. It's going to allow more scoring and clean breakaways out of the middle because you can't, if you're playing dominating teams, you could roll four forwards up off the side. So, and you can't drop one back. It's certainly going to influence tight games, win and save the game situations. Teams won't have to deal with numbers back on them out of the middle. I think what I saw just caught glimpses of the double 50s. That's a real concern. I'm not sure that was the aim, and it seems very difficult. It's just to be happening more than we would think is ideal. So hopefully some common sense prevails before it all starts.
Let's sort that out before Thursday week. You tagged the one game in Ballarat when we parted company last week. So out of that, St Kilda wins. McCartan looks like he's got another concussion. Robertson is wonky in the aftermath. The Bulldogs are wonky entirely, fitting in the where are they? Where do they sit? Sort of two losses to the Suns and the Saints, scoring mid-70s. Like, if there was one to sit there and go, oh, that didn't pan out at all, it felt like that game.
Yeah, it did. And I was probably more particularly looking at the forward half for the Western Bulldogs. And Luke Beveridge clearly made some adjustments down there. He put Norton forward. I think he kicked 3 goals. He could have kicked 5 or 6, really. He had some strange sort of set shot actions early, but it looked better forward of centre. It did look better. They'd be concerned about two losses. I mean, we did say that winning and losing is not everything, and you need to, you know, just keep perspective a little bit, but it is to St Kilda and the Gold Coast who are perceived to be down the bottom end of the ladder. So that's a worry. Is Norton going to be the long-term answer?
So Norton looks like a complete gun defender.
Yeah.
And they went into last season trying to trade out Wood from key defence to be makeshift forward. Feels to me like let Norton play his first 3-4 years in defence. But if you've got no options...
Well, you've always got options. So and if they haven't got an option in a JLT prior to round one, what were they doing in the off-season? What was the next step? What was the next point? And you can mount an argument that just should be Boyd and Shackey. But, you know, you just can't put all your eggs in two baskets, the two eggs in the basket sort of thing. But I look at what's happened with Jacob Wiedering and the reluctance to just leave him at centre-half back or full-back, whatever you want to call it, and let him build and develop. They threw him forward with the same need at Carlton. We just need a target. This guy can mark the ball. Let's take what comes. And I think that impacted his development over the last couple of years. And he's just getting back now to where he was 2.5 years ago. So I just hope that that doesn't happen with Norton. I really do. He may serve a purpose up forward that may work for them in the short term while they're waiting for a Boyd to come back or, you know, looking for some other targets at the end of the season or using a second ruck down there. But it can't come at the cost of one of your elite picks in the draft. Give this kid a chance.
David King running the Monday means test. We get Kingy to put on the table. What else was there of substance across the weekend? What were there glimpses of that might resonate once the season proper starts? How are you seeing the restrictions on the runners, King?
Look, I don't notice it. I don't love it. One thing I will say is that we still need coaches to be able to influence games. They feel like they've lost the handle a little bit, and that was probably going to happen. But waiting to after goals, I'm just wondering whether we've gone too far with it and wonder whether we could meet a middle ground again and say to the clubs, look, you caused this problem because you put a runner out in the field and he stayed out there for the whole quarter. And he come was off
manipulating the defensive structures.
Yeah, he's getting
and
involved.
Being the 19th person or an on-field coach.
Yeah, spot on. So if we said, look, you've got your own runner five times, four times a quarter, he's got a minute to get out and do what he has to do and get back, you know, that'll be policed by the boundary line steward. Would that appease the coaches? Because the players are now talking about it. I heard the press conference from I think it was Luke Beveridge just talking about saying the players are onto it now. So if the players are onto it, they've got so much to concentrate on. We're asking them to do a lot. Can they really then? Do we want a Nathan Fyfe going outside of his game and what he does to worry about, oh, now I've got to move a centre-half back to centre-half forward and flip the other guy back there? Do we really have to – do we really want that? I don't know if we do. I don't mind the coaches having influence on the game. We said we've got to keep strategy. I know we want to give the game back to
it's
the players.
It's supposed to enhance strategy.
Yeah.
What's been done as well as open the game up.
Let's give them a tool. Let's give them back the runners but on AFL terms. Four times, five times a quarter – a minute to run your messages. If you can't do it in a minute, you know what? You're going to have to wait for the break.
Yep.
We're sort of thinking the teams will kick more goals this year anyway, won't we, with the new rules?
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah. So if you run a message out, let's just say you've kicked a goal, your runner goes out now, comes back off, there's a high likelihood there'll be another centre-bounce goal. You can't run another message after another centre-bounce goal. So it's sort of silly to say, oh, but you got six opportunities this quarter. Because they might be back-to-back goals.
Yep.
There's nothing to correct on a back-to-back goal, really, from the offensive point of view.
The meaning in JLT2, David King runs the rule on a Monday morning across all that took place. Kingy, there's a set of questions here, so take them one by one. Peter in Ferntree Gully, will Stephen May get a week?
Yeah, see, I had this discussion with Kane Corns and a few of his followers, none of mine, Jerry. He's a very loose on Twitter on the weekend. A lot of negative feedback. Look, I was of the opinion or the belief after the presentation from Steve Hocking and the umpiring department that any contact to the head and you're in trouble. If you choose to bump, you make contact, I'm sorry, that's the rule. And I thought he made contact with the chin. So Stephen May stepped in, made contact with Jared Berry's chin.
Yep.
He left the field. I don't think he came back on the ground. I don't see where the wriggle room is. How does he get out of that?
No, if it's high contact, he doesn't get out of it.
Even if it's whiplash, he's in trouble.
Yes.
So any contact, whether it starts as contact to the chest and finishes with contact to the head or...
Yep.
Actually makes contact with the point of the chin, he's in trouble.
Yep. So I think everything will swing on the medical report there. I wouldn't feel at all optimistic for Stephen May. He put himself in that position. That action is typically not liked. And if that contact is high, then I think he's missing. I think he gets graded, I should say, and then it's the levels in all of that.
I still think we should know a lot earlier than this. We're full-time professional now.
Yep.
We should know this outcome at the conclusion of certainly the next game.
Yeah.
Across the week. Yeah. I don't know why we wait till Monday.
How quick can you get your medical report, I suppose?
Yeah. Are we necessarily just going to hang players on medical reports?
No, well, so this one plays a role because it'll help establish where the contact was. Like if he does have whiplash or he was treated, if his jaw was checked or that will actually tell you where the contact was.
He laid on the ground for what felt like 30 seconds yep. and then was removed from the field. I'm not even sure he came back on. I don't think he'd come back on.
I think you and I see this the same way.
I think that we've got to get away from medical reports.
Yep. I'm worried about North's defence for round one. What would you do? That's Jock from Shepparton.
Well, it's a really tough one. Port Adelaide took 21 marks inside the forward 50 on the weekend. I mean, they are so young down back to Kangaroos. And that was with Scott Thompson, who's suspended. So the back six last year was Marley Williams, who's just done a calf. McMillan, who's done a calf during the week and is a question mark whether he plays. Tarrant's racing against the clock to come back from an AC shoulder surgery. Madjack Dore not there at the moment. Scotty Thompson suspended, as we said. There's massive problems. Sam Wright, I think, will be the only member of the back six to start round one that was there at round 23 last year.
Yeah. That's so problematic.
That's a huge issue. And look, Ben Mackay's just trying to make his way, and he looked lost at times on the weekend, which is a real concern coming in against Hogan, Lobb, Fife when he goes forward. So there's a round one opportunity for Fremantle to get hold of the Kangaroos down back, but their midfield's going to have to be a hell of a lot better than they were yesterday.
Hi, Kingy. Any concerns with the D's heading into the season, not able to win a game in the pre-season?
No, I don't think there's any concern with it. Jared, you know I'm the D's number one ticket holder.
Yeah.
And
they're one of the classic teams, just don't worry about the results.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just trialling some things. We didn't see Max Gorn the first game. They rested some players. They've done some different things. And I honestly think they've got more tools to challenge the 666 and in some different ways than any other team. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the sheer hit-out dominance, Max putting it where he wants, really, they'll be one that'll excite. I mean, their scoring power goes through the roof again. Smith was fantastic. Joel Smith, kicking, I think he kicked four goals. I mean, they've had they've had significant wins through the preseason despite not winning games.
Kingy, I know it's just JLT games, but I thought the Bombers looked flat and didn't move the ball that well going forward at times. Still capable of the blistering slingshot play, but it doesn't. But if it doesn't happen, what is plan B? Can you give your thoughts?
Yeah, look, concerned about the Bombers, and I'm a fan of where they've gone from and to. They look like it was a perfect build, really. They took two marks inside the forward 50 on the weekend. I've got a couple of queries. Michael Hurley doesn't seem to be in the same form or form that I thought he would have been in given the changes to their defensive platform under Ben Rutten. That's a concern. Hooker's clearly going to be out for a little while. Their forward line, two marks inside forward 50. If Tip and Woody's not down there, I don't know if they have a recognised crummer that can both put on pressure and crumb and be a real threat, like we saw Liam Ryan and Willie Rioli again yesterday. I mean, guys like, and they serve a purpose, but when Parrish goes forward, is he really a threat when Bagley's down there? Yep, his defensive pressure may be okay, but at what cost? I sort of think that maybe they need to look at that. And I keep coming back to the West Coast Eagles model, that they tried to rest midfielders or makeshift players, forward of centre, historically, and it didn't work. He said, no, we've got to go back to players that have forward line craft, that have that innate ability to score or know where the ball's going, get to the right spots to crumb and pressure. I'm not sure the Bombers have got the balance right there at the moment, and that's what the JLT's for.
Andrew texts through, spot on with centre bounce highlights in the JLT. Round one Demons game, got up after a Melbourne goal. When I got back, the centre bounce was about to begin, yet the score seemed incorrect. Finally worked out that there had been another goal in between my quick break.
Oh, it kills you, Jared. It kills you, and that's great for us. And I think that'll happen more and more as we go. So let's wait and see.
Midfield pairings. This is one of your pet topics coming into the season.
Yeah, I was just looking on the weekend again, and we're looking for little wins. We're looking for things that have changed, but if you've got two gun midfielders, it is such an asset. You know, we talked a lot last year about Oliver and Brayshaw, but now you can look at Sheed and Shuey. I mean, they are two that have gone next level. Sheed's form's been out of control. I think they had 17 clearances between the two of them on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And Shuey wasn't in there half the time. He was parked forward of centre during that first half. The Crouch brothers, I mean, and we've been waiting for Brad to come on and get his health right and have a fair dinkum go at an AFL season. Gee, they looked dominant. I think they had 80 touches between the two of them last week and won every clearance available. And just there's a sneaky look at Lachie Neale with Jared Lyons. That as a pairing is just complementary. It's going to take them places. So the question for the teams that we're not sure on, like a Carlton, say, Cripps and who? Fife and who? Who's the next one? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing with Collingwood today. Yeah, who are their gun pairings in the midfield? Who is it? Because it has shifted a little bit over the last couple of seasons. It's not just Pendlebury anymore.
Yep. 1-300-736-736 is the number for the Monday Means Test. Lynn is with us in Dramana. Hello, Lynn.
G'day, Jared. How are you?
Very well.
I just want to ask you guys how far you think the mighty Brisbane Lions can take our undefeated record in the JLT2 this year.
Well, they were very good, weren't they? Look, they play exciting footy. They challenge you when they get the ball. And they've got a forward line that's working. It was good to see Hipwood do what he did. Rayner just takes your vision. Oh, I think he's one player that we don't really talk a lot about Cam Rayner. I know he came seventh in the Rising Star last year, playing a really difficult position. Small full forward, go on ball in parts when you're really not fit enough to do that. His body's not at that level yet, but that was a good win yesterday, a really good win. I thought Harris Andrews found some form after being a bit scratchy the previous week. They've got a really good handle on where their kids are at. And Daniel Rich, for a player who cops a lot of criticism, he looks to have settled in this JLT, across that half-back line, steps centre forward, and he's kicking. We talk a lot about his kicking, but he's actually getting more ball now.
Mm.
They're going to be more than or better than a dangerous team this year.
Yep.
You know, 5 wins the last 2 seasons, a lot more competitive last year, but they were just still dangerous. You know, Hawthorn found that. They got them twice, but they're going to be better than dangerous this year.
All right. Aaron in Swan Hill has texted through, will Asava, Radaglia and Gary Ablett play as stay-at-home forwards and Hawkins play a Richo role on the wing for the Cats this year?
Well, I don't think they can afford that luxury. I think that Hawkins has been such a goal-scoring machine for them. He's been their forward line, really. It's interesting, the Gary Ablett discussion. You know, where does he play? I don't think he'll play deep forward. I think he'll play more half forward. That's been Geelong's problem. They've had no consistency with those, you know, extra midfielders rolling up the ground, the fifth and sixth forward that come up the ground. They haven't had quality there or consistent names. They've been in and out of the team. Yep. You talk about Cockatoo, you talk about McCarthy, who's just gone to Brisbane. Parfitt's been asked now to go in the absolute midfield. So they just haven't had, you know, we've seen Jones there, we've seen some names, but no one's really played 20 games as a half forward for Geelong. And I think that's the role he'll play with his. Some of his kicking inside 50 on the weekend, it's just absolutely perfect. And that's where he'll make his money.
Steve's in Hampton. Steve, welcome to you.
Hey, boys. How are you going?
Very well.
Just two things. I always noticed, I went up to Metricon last year and saw Fiorini play for the Gold Coast Suns. And he keeps on racking up possessions and getting the best, but doesn't get a lot of kudos. Very good player. And just on the 50-50, surely the next umpire can take the mark on the 50 and the player that's infringed just stops and goes backwards. And the next player down the ground takes the mark.
Yeah, I understand the logic of that, but it's a shift from where we are in terms of players, one, getting across. And I just thought the Sean Higgins example on the weekend, where he wasn't trying to impede the player from playing on or getting to the mark quickly. He was 3 metres to the side. I just don't think it's needed. It's an overcorrection that I'm sure will change.
Did you have a second point, Steve?
Uh, No, no, that was it. I just saw Fiorini. I don't know why he doesn't get any. He doesn't get much publicity. I think he's a fantastic player. That if he was in Melbourne, he'd get a lot more.
Well, they're going to have.
Loss,
yeah, good. It's a good call. And I think that with the Suns, it'll probably be that way for another 12 months. I mean, they're going to struggle in terms of winning games of football, and really disappointed to see Rankin do his hamstring on the weekend. I mean, he's one man that could have had five or six goal game and got them across the line against a St Kilda type team in round one. So good news for St Kilda. Given their woes as well, Jared. I mean, we haven't really touched on McCartan and Roberton.
Yes. So Roberton obviously caused concern, as from what I've read, as the St Kilda medical staff addressed the team just to explain what was going on, because they've lived through that with him.
Yeah.
And then McCartan is, if it's formalised as an eighth concussion, then... that just causes tremors in the modern sporting landscape.
It does, and it brings... At some point, it becomes a decision for Paddy. At some point. I don't know when that point is, and maybe we're still a distance from that. But we've had significant trauma to players who've retired recently, and it's just such a hard one to get a handle on concussion.
Jeff's with us in Torquay. Hello, Jeff.
G'day, guys. Look, apologies if you've already covered this. I just joined in, but just want Kingy's opinion, and yours, Jared, for that matter, on G. Ablett. It strikes me that the new centre bounce rules would be a more ideal time than just about ever for Gary Ablett to be in the middle. And the other side of that coin is he is one of the only people in the Geelong team at the moment who has any idea how to kick the ball into the forward line. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you on the kicking in the forward line. He's still head and shoulders their best kick inside the forward 50. And we talk a lot about Patrick Dangerfield and his ability to win the ball, but ball in hand, you'd rather Ablett kicking it in than Dangerfield. No doubt about that. The Cats are going to be fascinating. They really are. And the opinions on where they'll finish vary from, bottom end of the top four to outside the eight as low as 12th. I mean, it's just crazy. So I think when you see what they did on the weekend and you see some of these young kids coming through, I've got no doubt they'll be fine.
And James texts through, I'm very excited about the Swans forward line. A healthy Reed, Buddy and Menzel is a huge headache for oppositions. Throw in the pressure small forwards like Ronke, Hayward and Papley, and backup tools in Blakey and McCartan, and we have lots of options.
Papley will be more than a small forward this year. He'll be a prime centre-bounce midfielder. He's their best centre-bounce return player. When he goes in, they win more often than not. So expect more from him. I was up there last week. Sydney offered up through Fox Footy to come up and spend a day with them and just have a look around, check things out, and we'll follow that up more and in a better way on Fox Footy to show you exactly what went on. But their leadership group trained harder than any other leadership group in the competition. And I've watched a lot of training over the last 2 to 3 years, and there's no doubt that they are, when that whistle goes to start training, they're invested 100%. They don't fumble. They don't miss targets. They don't go at 90%. They go at 100%. They drive the standards. It's no secret why they're where they are.
SCG.
Yeah. I don't know whether you caught when you were clapping at the NBL. I know you were focused somewhere else, Jared. Swept away with the boss, I'm sure. But the surface at the SCG has come under a fair bit of scrutiny after the Waratahs played the Reds.
Yes.
Now, I was up there last week, and it looks to me like they've covered the centre wicket area, the old cricket wicket, with some new turf. That wasn't the problem. But they had some real issues, and I don't know whether people are across it or not, but it was a big story in Sydney. Anytime they packed a scrum, it basically just shredded the ground. Now, that's not necessarily a problem for AFL until you hear about the fact that they're playing these games on the SCG because Allianz is being pulled down. This is going to be the case for 3 years. So I'm just trying to work out how that's going to affect us. So by the time I've nominated round six as the problem, Saturday night, GWS, Sydney Swans versus GWS on the 27th of April. By that stage, there will have been three Waratahs games and three Roosters games. So NRL and Rugby Union. They're going to chop this ground to within an inch of its life, Jared. And if we get any sort of rain...
Which we do.
Which Sydney do.
Yeah.
We've seen that through the cricket off-season. So wait till winter actually starts. So when you look at the week that starts Saturday, April 20th, the Waratahs play. Then on the 25th, which is the Thursday, the Roosters will play. Now, they run north-south and the other teams go east-west. Yeah,
this bit I find unfathomable.
Yeah. So the middle is still the prime area for both codes. And then that's when I say the 27th is the problem. So it'll be the third game on the SCG in 7 days, and it'll be one of our prime games, the Sydney Swans versus the Giants. I'm just concerned that after a little bit of rain, which we'll get, it'll be like an 80s-type game. It'll just be a block of mud. They're already raising safety issues after one game of rugby union. One game. We haven't had traffic on it yet.
Yep.
So I think this is going to be a big talking point in 6 or 7 weeks' time.
And depending on who wins the state election, it mightn't just be 3 years. Oh, they might never rebuild that stadium.
That's a joke up there. But when you see the vision, and we might try and show it Wednesday night, when you see the turf lift, you think, wow, the AFL would never do that damage to that ground.
Yep.
That they are doing with that, you know, the force that they generate to drive each pack backwards. And I'm not a fan of the game at all, Jared, and I'm going to become less of a fan of it as the year goes on.
One other note on John Longmire, which caught your eye, so this is post-match.
Good. This is good.
So no journalists here. It's obviously club media staff asking you some questions, John. So what did you make of today's performance?
Just thought I'd swan in there.
It's good to have one here anyway.
I heard it in there. I went, oh, I better get it.
Well, that was so Ben Dixon. There wasn't one journalist at the press conference for John Longmire after the game. His presser went 3 minutes. I'm surprised it went that long. So he had an internal, I think it was Jordan Lang, asking questions. Yep. So it was basically they hosted their own press conference.
The Politburo.
That's not a good look, is it?
No, that gives you a little bit of an insight into pre-season.
Yeah, a long way to go, Lismore. And credit to Ben Dixon for dropping in and asking a couple of rippers.
Yep.
Got the question of the week. But that is crazy, isn't it?
It's less than optimal. Kingy, can you please publicly demand immediate abolishing of the new 100-metre penalty nonsense for the sanity of all football fans? That's from Dom. Kingy was right on the mark there early. And SCG surface is a disgrace.
You get a little bit of feedback on Horatio Fantasia being a crummer. Of course he's a crummer, but he's more of a lead-up type and a swooping-type crummer, not necessarily a pressure player. I think people know what you mean. You've got to have roles rather than just shifting players from other areas. And clearly Martin and Cochin are a gun pairing, Jared. I didn't mention them before, but you know there were probably four or five other pairings I could have mentioned, but didn't quite get to.
Has your team got the gun pairing in the midfield for the competitions it's going to be?
I want to ask you about the six-day breaks.
Well, that's why I think we saw the bloodless football of the weekend, actually.
Ross Lyon said in the post-match that he's, you know, how can we have a JLT schedule that's, we've been idle for 6 months and we end up with a six-day break? Geelong had to travel back from Perth for a six-day break.
And so there's one JLT game to go. You'll hear it here this afternoon. Collingwood and Carlton in Morwell, so public holiday footy. Before we get to the last one, Kingy, have you got some takeaways? Three takeaways from the comp?
Yeah, I think... Overall, you just want to get through unscathed by injury, really. So it's really disappointing that we lose players like Harms and Jake Kennedy Harris and Rankin and Cox and the question marks over McCartan and Roberton and Paddy Ryder and Aaron Young. All these players, really disappointing that they've been impacted, having got to this point in pre-season, really, you know, minutes away from round one. So that's disappointing, and that's the only loss, really, through pre-season. Forget form, forget everything else. I think it's been a huge win for strategy, for the AFL's implementations, particularly of 666 and the kickouts, and the kickouts are a work in progress. The big one that sort of snuck under the guard of everyone, I think, at the time was the ability for Ruckman to grab the ball. That's a definite win for the game. So for strategy and the innovation of the AFL, I think that's been a huge tick, and that's what the JLT should be. You know, maybe we pull back on a couple of things like the 50-metre/100-metre penalties, and that's fine. We can make those adjustments on the run. But overall, I think Ross Lyon put it best. He said in the press conference after the game yesterday, be excited by what our best looks like. if you're thinking about what your team's done through the JLT, and it may be for a half, it may be for 10 minutes, it may be for the whole two rounds, be excited by what our best looks like, and that's what they're trying to aspire to, regardless of who's out there or whatnot. It's hard to judge from, you know, what they're trying to achieve minute to minute, but be excited by what your team's best looks like.
That's a really good note. I was going to finish it there, but I do want to ask you, are you a afternoon grand final or twilight grand final man?
There's no need to change, so let's just leave it.
Yep.
We've changed enough, haven't we?
Well, there is. There's always change.
You seem like you're moving.
Oh, no, I'm a twilight man. I'm declared on that front. I think the spectacle is enhanced.
What time was the NBL on? On Sunday?
2:50?
I think twilight would be good because you're clearly too excited. Too excited through the afternoon to get the clapper out, Jared.
4:30.
Were you wearing a team jumper?
No, I was.
Singlet?
Nope. Singlet and the clapper. You can take me away at that
no
stage.
No more clapper for you, mate.
David King running the Monday means test each Monday to make sense of the footy weekends. Next week we'll be in countdown mode. We might ponder the big issues of the footy season, put a couple of markers in the ground and then draw back to those each and every round. David King. The latest out of St Kilda comes with a heavy tone of concern. The general manager of football, Simon Lethlean, provided this update to us on Paddy McCartan and Dylan Robertson. McCartan copped a head knock late in the second quarter of the JLT clash. The key forward was assessed by club doctors and ruled out for the second half. McCartan was feeling unwell after the game and was monitored overnight in Ballarat's St John of God Hospital. The 22-year-old was resting up at home on Monday. Lethlean said it was now just a wait and see on how he pulled up. As with every concussion, it's now just about his symptoms as to how quickly he'll be back on the track. Given his history of head knocks, it goes without saying that we'll take a cautious approach. Robertson reported feeling unwell or feeling unsteady at the end of Sunday's match and was subsequently assessed by paramedics. Dylan also monitored overnight in hospital, Lethlean says. We'll know more in the next few days as to what caused him to feel unwell and what the prognosis is from here. So a note of concern from the Saints around Paddy McCartan and Dylan Robertson. We spoke about that at length in the means test with David King, so that's available on the podcast if you didn't catch it, but there are a watching brief. We'll have more footy this afternoon. You'll hear the call of Collingwood and Carlton from Morwell. On SEN, we'll talk about the AFLW, which is now set to head into the last round. It's a cliffhanger in Conference A, and the divide has been well recognised, so we'll assess that before the morning is done as well. But cricket, Australia deserves all the plaudits in the world, not only Friday night, but then into overnight. It was a staggering run chase beyond anything that Australia had managed in the format before.
Next one played quietly towards the mid-on fielder, and the batsman will run too. And that will be it. Australia win by 4 wickets. What a chase this has been. Usman Khawaja anchoring the innings with 91. Turner returns. Not out on 84 of just 43 deliveries, 5 fours and 6 sixes, and now the series is level at 2-2.
There was a Hanscom century in there as well. They're a funny bunch at our sister station, Sports Flashes. I think they take the results very personally. One text who listened throughout the night loved when the Indian cricket commentator said, "The crowd are stunned, are going home early." Ha, ha, ha. Australia laughs at this stage, and now we go to a decider on Wednesday night. Robert Craddock, that was remarkable, Crash. Welcome.
Yes, Jared, it was. 2 for 12 in the fourth over. That was Australia. I mean, what odds? 20-1, 30-1 they'd have been. And to get up from there was extraordinary. But Ashton Turner, very interesting player. Very interesting. Greg Chappell's liked him since he was a kid. They snuck him into an Australian team about 6 years ago just to play in a county game in England when the Australians were over there. And that last little bit of highlights you played, that highlighted Ashton Turner. Turner's subtle skill. I tell you what he is. He's a greyhound between the wickets, and it really unsettles teams. It really does.
So the backdrop to the weekend, Crash, did recounted these at the start of the show. So if you take 2.5 years' worth of one-day cricket overseas for Australia, dated back to the 30th of September, Australia had played 21 matches and won once. And now they have put these two performances together, and they're brilliant performances. And in the lead up to a World Cup, which is off our shores, this is becoming a really important series. They've won the T20 2-0, and they've now levelled the 50-over series up 2-all.
And the last bastion of Australian supremacy, Jared, strangely enough, is in the World Cup 50 overs. You know, it's where, you know, in Test cricket, we've slid down the rankings, and indeed in 50-over cricket. But after winning 5 World Cups, whenever opponents see that yellow strip coming at them, they sense trouble. And this result will reverberate around the world. Suddenly, like even Michael Vaughan tweeted, aha, here we go, here they come. You put, you know, I mean, 4 players. You put Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Starc, David Warner, Steve Smith in this team, which is already taking shape. I mean, you've got a first-class team. If you beat India in India, that's it. There's the benchmark. You should fear no one anywhere.
There is an element, though, that it does feel like it's confusing things a little bit. So, Khawaja, 104 backed up by 91.
I'm not
sure that he was in their first choice World Cup team. No. Hanscom, who they take, makes a century and gives Australia the platform from which to attack. Turner, so they're having a look at Turner. I don't think he would have been in the first choice World Cup side. Maybe the squad. It's fascinating. So 1 more against India, 5 against Pakistan, and then the choices have to be made.
Yeah, look, it really is, Jared. And I was sitting down playing the numbers game this morning, and someone's going to miss out who deserves to go. I mean, and small things matter. I know one of the concerns about Ashton Turner is he's had a bit of a dodgy shoulder. So they ask themselves this question: can we really go into it with Stephen Smith, who's having a bit of trouble throwing, David Warner, who's had an elbow injury? How many guys can you take with suspect throwing arms? Now, you think to yourself, oh, that's not the first consideration what runs. Yeah, but they've got to be able to throw. The interesting thing about Turner is he plays a very, very specific role, a James Faulkner sort of role. He did it about 4 times in a row in the Big Bash, where he came in and just thundered in the late overs. He gets that he's a really smart player, and that got triple points for him in the selection room last night because it was under pressure. Everything was on the line, the series, India in India, Bumrah bowling, Bhuvaneshwar Kumar, and so they loved him anyway. So I don't see – he's probably 1 innings away from going. And they'd love him to play that finisher role, the Michael Bevan, the James Faulkner. So it's tight, Jared. You're 100% right. Hanscom can go as a backup keeper. You know, very attractive. May play in the first test – but may play in the first choice World Cup team ahead of Carey, you know, if they feel that they need extra batting strength.
What's Khawaja done to his prospects? So for a long time he was sat out of 50-over cricket. Well, he memorably batted the Thunder to victory in a BBL when nobody really thought he was a T20 player. Yeah. He's had his moments in the 50-overs. He was made to – well, he was sat out of national colours for a long time. Langer brings him in, and then these 2 critical innings, a century and then a 90.
Jared, there's something we've got to say here, and I'll tell you what it is. World Cups, have a look at the record. They're not won by flash Harrys or fancy Dans. You have a look at who scored all the big runs in World Cup. Ponting, Jayasuriya, Javed Miandad. They're heavy-duty players. Now, not for a minute am I putting Usman Khawaja in that class, but he's just one of our top-ranked test batsmen, a very experienced player, knows his way around. And I know he's got his foibles. He's not the greatest fieldsman. He probably could be a bit fitter and all this. But he's the sort of player you would take to a World Cup, specifically for that reason, because heavy-duty players win World Cups. He is making himself hard. They've never really liked him. You know what? They just feel that he hasn't improved as a player.
Yep.
Fair point. Fair criticism. I don't think he's improved much, but hard to leave out. And he's a streak player too. Now that he's in form, I reckon he'll go.
The form part of it is fascinating. So out the back of Canberra and then do this two in a row and decide to come in on Wednesday night. The other bit I liked about it, Crash, is this is clearly going to be a high-scoring World Cup. If you plot what's been happening on English soil, and you can do that through the Champions Trophy, you can do that through the frightening way in which England has played its cricket at home, is to not be broken down. I mean, once Shikhar Dhawan makes 143 and Rohit Sharma's 95 and they put on 193 for the first innings, is there's many a side who just sort of crumble in the face of that. Is to mount a chase like this so close to the World Cup, is that becomes a touchstone. That's something that they can draw on if a team gets away from them in the first innings of a World Cup match.
Oh, yeah. Well, England regularly score over 300, Jared. And I had a lovely chat to Greg Chappell about technique the other day. And he was saying, you know, with the bats, new bats the way they are, he said, people look at video of Greg Chappell, he said, of me, and they say, gee, you were compact. And he said, you had to be close to the ball because if you mishit it, it went nowhere because of the quality of the bats. Now, he said, you can open up, spread your arms, half hit the ball, and it still carries over the fence and certainly over the field. He said, whereas I had to stay really in tight. He said, and I thought of that, these massive totals they're scoring one day cricket. Like, Greg would have had a completely different technique today. He's the prototype, isn't for the classical technique, but he'd have changed it. And these massive scores that England are making at home, you'll have to get something really big and dangerous. Batsmen who can really go hard. Sure, you'll have your ticket. I think they'll play different roles. Khawaja will be your ticket along, keep it rolling, run a ball man. And then the fireworks experts like Maxwell will come in, Ashton, Turner, you know, and they'll do a bit of biff and barging.
Yes, that's a nice way to describe it. Aaron Finch, so he got a mid-30s to sort of settle the nerves. He got a 93 to make you believe that he would force his way back to form, and then he's made a second ball duck. So matters aren't sorted, but at least there was a bit of a breathing space with a couple of scores.
Yeah, there was. He batted well the other night, although I must admit I was up for when he was bowled second ball by Kumar, and it was that really – it's terribly chastening when you know exactly the ball that's coming and it gets you anyway. Bhuvaneshwar Kumar, master swing bowler, was always going to say, right, Aaron, I'm going to try and swing this into you through bat and pad. And I think they said, oh, that's as wide as a gate or something like that. The commentator said they were right too. It just had that really bad feel about it. But I so hope they take him, Jared. I put the question on Greg Chappell, national selector, and he said three things. He said, yes, we're concerned. He said, it has taken me back to my day when I was under pressure as a captain. I volunteered to lead the selection meeting. And they said, Phil Wright, he said, oh, come on, Greg, just bat sensibly. And he said, but I was really aware when the captain wobbles, the dressing room quivers with him. He said, I saw it around me. So he said, you're not shocking me by asking about Finch. He said, however, proven players. He said, proven World Cups is won by proven players. It's this point again, Jared. And Aaron Finch, he's 11 centuries in ODIs. And if you put him back with Warner, his old buddy, I think it can click, but, you know, he'd want to put something on the board. He's got six games left, and, he wouldn't want to go 3-5-7-2-1-4, put it that way.
Yeah, no telephone numbers here, Crash. So what rides on the decider now in Delhi? It becomes a huge event.
Oh, it does. I think Australia have gained so much from this series anyway. If they lose, this series is still very beneficial to Australia. They've stayed with them. Two wins and a close loss. So it's been a series of significant progress. Berendorf, I like him. You know, I know he only took none for 61 last night, but he's right in the frame. Jai Richardson, I know he took 3 wickets last night. I feel he's fading a little bit. Adam Zampa, sort of okay. Takes wickets each time. So it is big. To beat India at home after the carnage they inflicted on Australia and our shores this summer, leading into a World Cup is just magnificent. All of a sudden, it would feel as if the last 12 months, even though they did matter, it would feel as if they don't matter.
I'm a bit with you. I think a lot rests on this. I know it's happening during the night, so maybe not full attention, but enough. And whether it's for us or just whether it's for them themselves is, I think there's a lot riding on Wednesday night. And almost if Australia loses, you're right, is they've got what they needed out of it. But if Australia was to win, if they could go to India and win the T20 and the ODI series, is suddenly a team might transform on those on the back of those results.
Well, it also gets you used to sort of abrasive crowds. I mean, you know, the Indian crowd just went hysterical. And I know it's a different crowd vibe entirely in England, but remember, you'll have Warner back, there'll be crowd sledging, there'll be baiting. And to win offshore in that abrasive Indian environment, you know, is terrific. I mean, and they turned the crowd silent. I mean, and even against their own players. Rishabh Pant dropped a Mr. Stumping last night, and the crowd started chanting for Dhoni, and it really unsettled the Indians. I love the sight of Turner galloping between wickets. You could tell they were rattled in India because he was taking twos where everyone else was taking ones. This is good play, really good play.
All right, I'm going to ask you about Smith and Warner and the path back that has been chosen by Australia. There's a bit happening internationally. We were watching this morning as India, the West Indies were bowled out for 71, backing up their 45. In T20, so they've lost the capacity to make runs. Janine's in Narre Warren. She's joined us, Crash. Janine, welcome.
Oh, good morning, boys. Yes, I'm so tired this morning after watching that game last night. Brilliant effort. But I actually wanted to talk to you about South Africa. I was watching one of their matches the other night against Sri Lanka, and the commentators were actually talking about their fielding issues, South Africa, because they have, they rattled off four or five names that can't throw because of shoulder issues.
Yep.
Hashim Amla being one of them, and I can't for the life of me remember the rest, but yeah, and they'd be, you know, selected players, I'd imagine, for the World Cup, and yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go. I mean, if you can't throw, what good are you in the field?
Really good point. And the modern cricketer, Janine, is playing so much, it is an issue. As we said, front and centre to Ashton Turner's World Cup hopes are the fact that a slightly sore shoulder he's been carrying, struggling to throw, so does Steve Smith, so does David Warner, you know, with their injury. So it's how many can you carry? And how often have we seen in a World Cup semi-final a direct hit at the stumps or a drop ball? It's a significant issue. It really is. It's funny. I was talking to an old cricketer the other day, and I said to him, if you went back at the start of your career, what would you do differently? And he said, definitely learn to throw both hands. And it was not done. Some kids do it now, but it was one thing that could have easily come into cricket 20 years before it has.
So looking towards how Smith and Warner return in time for the World Cup and what role they have to play, as Malcolm Speed was in here last week, Crash, as he was running his experienced eye over all matters in terms of governance with the sporting bodies, and he said that internally and externally, this will not be an easy path to navigate, the reintegration for such an important tournament.
Well you look at, I mean, we've got the anniversary coming up of the ball tampering this month, have we? And there'll be more stories about it, who knew what, who didn't know, what friendships have been fractured. And you know, just look at the cold facts of it. I mean, David Warner, you know, his mates constantly say, gee, what did he get out of it? Nothing. He was doing it for the bowlers and you know, they're dirty on him. And so around and around it goes. And I don't think cricketers do have a capacity for just getting on with it, you know, for getting in the room and playing. But as I've said, I reckon you can snatch at a World Cup with a dressing room that's not that united and win it, because you're only sort of playing once every 5 days. I saw it with Steve Waugh's team, but you can't snatch it at Ashes victory. It's 5 days of a test and 5 tests crammed into about a month and a half. You were there. If there's any tension there, it just always prizes things apart. They've got both of them back to back, the World Cup and the Ashes. So, you know, the jury's out. The jury's out.
As ever, Crash, plenty of callers for you. Dan's in Wheelers Hill. Dan, welcome.
G'day, fellas. Talking about Sean Marsh, he's definitely in our best 11 one-day team. Obviously, he's just had a couple of low scores in the Indian series, coming back from a hammy and a bit of a break. Who would you leave out, actually, if Smith and Warner do come out? And also, I want to bring up the Ashes squad as well. I think that Sean Marsh should be in there as a reserve batsman. I think he's, you know, we've got Labuschagne and Burns who have just come back and made, you know, runs against a subpar Sri Lankan team. And I think mature master of experience. He's dug deep and done things for Australia in Test cricket many times, as in, say, Test matches. I think he needs to be in there.
So, Crash, how close do you think this... If there's a secret whiteboard somewhere that's got Game 1, First 11 World Cup, Warner, Finch, Smith, Marsh, Maxwell, Stoinis, Carey, Cummins, Stark, another seamer, Zampa or Lyon. Do you think that was the thinking?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, I think Hanscombe will be doing well to make the starting team. And, of course, Ashton Turner, just of the team from last night, that's very close to it, Jared, because, you know, Stark will come back. I think Hazelwood will come back. And then Cummins, of course, took 5 wickets last night. There you go. There's your anchor man. And I somehow think they're going to play Zampa ahead of Nathan Lyon.
Yep.
Start off. He does have a habit of taking wickets, Zampa. And the thing is about World Cups, and this is what Brad Hogg proved, wrist spinners are great in them because teams only get to face them once and they struggle to work them out. Whereas they go, like Brad Hogg, you could see the eyebrows narrowing from opposition batsmen going, not sure how to pick this guy's wrong, and then he was gone. You never had the chance to get used to him. The game's over and he's off to another opponent. That's why they love wrist spinners in World Cup. That's why they look closely at Lloyd Pope with his killer wrong, even though he won't go. But they need, you need a, if you've got a finger spin, wrist spinner who can beat on both sides of the bat, he's a chance. That's why I think Zampa go. But that 11 you chose, Jared, is very close, no doubt about it.
And I wonder what can change. That's the interesting part of these few games and what's to come next is can anyone force their way into what the set thinking might have been?
And Jared, one last one. Sean Marsh, this is a lesson to us all. I think in the Sydney test when they were after a number three batsman and he was, oh, I'm not sure about it, and Labuschagne Shane said, oh, bat there? Oh, can I bat three? Just, it's a lesson to us all. Seize the moment in life. When your boss says to you, you've got a chance to do this, put your hand up, run, say, I'll do it. Even if you fail, you know, just do it.
John's in Perth. John, welcome.
Oh, lovely.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we all?
Good on you, John. Lovely to have a call from Perth. Good on you.
Yeah, mate. I just want to raise a concern. Over the Steve Smith, Dave Warner re-insurgence into the Australian side, no doubt at the time that they were in our definitely starting 11 in all forms of cricket, but the damage done, and I know that they've served 12 months punishment for what has happened, but the damage and pride and integrity done to the baggy green, shouldn't they be made to earn their spot back in the side more than just say, right, the band's up, let's go, get them back in there, let's play?
Yeah, no. Well, I can't quite agree with you. I really agree with the ban, John. I really did. And I get your point. And you know what? There is lingering stigma. But on the record, Greg Chappell, the national selector, said to me last Friday, categorically on the record, he said, for me, once you've done your time, everything starts afresh. You can't punish a guy forever. He said, argue what you like about the fines, too hard, too lenient. He said, but we start straight away. Blank slate, start again. Sure, there's a reintegration process, but that's why they just will come back. They just will. Then it all starts, and then the interesting question of the chemistry. And I'm telling you, it'll be fascinating to see how they reintegrate because I'm sure some blokes won't get over it. How could you after what they've been through? But they'll go straight in, John, straight in.
It's Cup Day in Adelaide. That's where Tim is. Tim, welcome aboard.
Good morning, gentlemen. Not game of the Cup, unfortunately, but heading south for some lunch down the south coast. So nearly as good without losing money on the total, I suppose.
Good on you, Tim.
Probably in the same vein as John from Perth just now. My concern is probably more to do with the fact of with Warner just sliding straight back in is upsetting the apple cart. But we just know that he's got the personality, I think, to probably overrule some of the younger guys and just create that tension. We saw it even before Sandpaper Gate. Was it in the same test or a test before? We were arguing there with one of the South African players about he said what and she said what. And I'm just worried it's going to be like that old comment of, you know, a cancer in the dressing room that needs to be cut out. I'm concerned that we play two wonderful one-dayers. We're building up this momentum and potentially this could be undermined by one individual who's, you know, got an axe to grind perhaps.
totally authentic question, and I get it. I really do. That's a totally justifiable line of questioning. And Cricket Australia are all over it. I mean, they're trying to help the integration process by sitting blokes down with other blokes and talking it through and are you comfortable with this? And you know, but you can only go so far. Eventually, you have to leave them in the dressing room, don't you? But I wonder, what David Warner will we see? Will we? I tell you who we won't see. We won't see the attack dog, who was revved up to play that way by the team, you know, coaches and management. There's no question. He was the guy, you know, go get him, do this, do that. But, you know, he was the ball management man. So will we see the Reverend David Warner, the guy that cut out everything and was as mellow as you like on the field, the church mice all of a sudden? So I don't know what Warner will get. I suspect it'll be far more of the latter. I reckon he will ease himself back in. And so it's interesting times ahead. You're right.
All right. Crash. Last one to finish. Just as a sports fan, would you like to see Winx race the Autumn Sun as I dearly would?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I read today where it's unfortunate because, unlikely, but we want to see that, don't we? We want to see the best beat, and what a lovely finale it would be for Winx to beat the Autumn Sun and just sort of glide off into the sunset and leave us with so many great memories.
You glide off into the sunset of this Monday, Crash. It's lovely to chat as always.
Thanks, Jared.
Robert Craddock with All Matters Cricket for you.
Hand pass off to Lampard. Melbourne deep inside 50 and the mark is taken. Floating across the front by Cunningham with strength again. And now from 30 metres out directly in front to kick the goal that might keep Melbourne's season alive. They trail by 5 points. 30 out directly in front. Cunningham has kicked a goal and the D's leads.
That was the thriller of the AFLW weekend. Melbourne edging the Bulldogs. Frio beat Geelong by plenty. North got what it needed against Collingwood. Carlton beat Brisbane to go to the top of Conference B. And Adelaide just continued to send shudders through the whole competition as they belted the Giants. Fox Footy will show every game of every round of the 2019 AFL Women's third season live, including finals in the grand final with no ad break siren to siren. It's channel 504 on Foxtel. And from Fox Footy, Kate Sheehan is back with me on the program. Kate, welcome back.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me.
So what did you get out of the penultimate round at Adelaide in such good form at the moment?
They're a powerhouse, aren't they? I think when we look at them in the first 2 years, they were such a defence, well-structured unit. But then this year, Matthew Clark's just brought a new dimension to that team with such a terrific structured offence. And we're starting to see so many goals kicked. A few more players come into play, like Stevie Lee Thompson and Erin Phillips at her best. It's just been terrific to watch, I've got to say.
Is Erin the favourite for the league best and fairest for a second time?
Oh, I think she deserves to be. I mean, not many midfielders can go forward and kick 2 and 3 goals a game and have such an impact. She may not be necessarily getting the 27 disposals that Maddie Prisparkis had yesterday, but she just takes so much attention off some of the other players in her team. And to have a champion like Erin who can continually show up and dominate, you never question it. Whenever the ball's in Erin's hands, you know she's going to do something with it that's spectacular. And I actually love listening to men who have watched a lot of AFL and are starting to watch AFLW and say, wow, couldn't she transition into the men's game? I mean, I don't think that could happen, but they're even in awe of her, and I think that says a lot about our sport at this point in time.
They've scored in such a powerful way in recent weeks that they've insulated themselves, win or lose, the percentage of 184.3. The bitter result for Melbourne is it looked like they were going to sort of be the two semis in Conference A, but it's hard. Well, I don't think Melbourne can get there now. As North and Fremantle, one of them has to win and go to 24 points, so Melbourne would miss out on percentage even if they did upset the Crows. How bitter is it for Melbourne, who are going to finish with either the third or fourth best record overall and miss the finals?
Oh, look, they'd be disappointed, but I've had this conversation with a few people about the conference system. Whilst it may not have panned out the way everyone wanted it to, I'm not sure the AFL could have predicted that a few teams were going to be so powerful and so strong. I mean, Fremantle have had a terrific season. The first 2 years they weren't there. North Melbourne, we were all questioning whether such a terrific group of players could come together and gel and be such a organised and cohesive team, and they've done that so well. And then even the Crows, who came off that premiership year in the first season, and then that second year Aaron wasn't playing as well. There was a few things maybe internally that weren't working, as well as what they had in the first year, and then Matthew Clark comes in and just brings them all together. So I feel in a way that we're all hoping for the best from, you know, the Brisbane Lions, who have proven themselves in the first 2 years being grand finalists, and they haven't been themselves. So it was a lot of unknowns coming into this season three, because expansion was brought in. They weren't to know or be able to predict that teams were going to play the way that they ended up playing, and other teams maybe weren't as good as what we thought they were going to be.
So Conference B, Carlton's gone to the top of that on percentage from Geelong, outside of the Lions on 8. So Brisbane play Collingwood, who are winless through the season. So they're every chance, but they need a bit of percentage as well. Geelong play the Giants, who the Giants are out of business. Carlton have the crossover game, which has been treacherous for the Conference B teams against the Bulldogs, which I suppose will tell us whether the five best teams in Conference A are those teams. What do you expect to happen in Conference B?
I think the Western Bulldogs Carlton game will be a fascinating contest next week. I called the game, the Western Bulldogs Melbourne game, on Saturday night, and the Dogs were starting to really generate some of that play that we knew and we expected of them last year, that uncontested football where they just managed to get a lot of uncontested marks and get free players. I really feel like the injury to Brooke Lachlan and Izzy Huntington going down was a huge impact on the Western Bulldogs team. And let's not forget, they lost two of their gun midfield players that really got that ball firing into the forward line in Emma Carney and Jenna Brunton. And so all of a sudden they're expecting these young girls to step up and be able to fill the void. We've seen that Katie Brennan's had to take herself into the midfield from times to get her hands on the footy, and it hasn't necessarily worked out. But on Saturday night, I started to see that team was coming together and they were starting to link up a lot more, and they probably should have won the game on Saturday night. So I think when they go out and play Carlton in the final match of the round this coming weekend, there's going to be a lot on the line. Yeah. There'll be a lot of pride to play for, and there'll be a lot of girls trying to cement their spot in the team.
Who wins, Kangaroos or Fremantle, for the last spot in the Conference A finals?
Oh, Fremantle were pretty impressive on the weekend. I think Geelong did a terrific job of suffocating them in that first half, and that's what we've sort of come to expect from the Cats this year. They play a really contested brand of footy, but all of a sudden Fremantle got their forward line pumping. They got Cara Dinella and got her hands on the footy. She'd only had 3 disposals up until half time, and then after that she just wheeled herself into the contest and they ran away with it. So they're a pretty good team, really good defensively, but even more impressive a bit like Adelaide. They've really done a lot of work in that forward line over the off-season. So, I don't know. I feel like the Kangaroos, they're an exceptionally talented team, putting it together for 4 quarters against a really great offensive team. When they played the Crows, they just looked tired. They looked a little lost. They couldn't compete with that offensive-defensive transition. So I think it'll be a similar game with Fremantle on the weekend. I think the Kangaroos will get over the line. I think they've just probably got a bit of polish both ends of the ground. Jess Duffin's been a terrific find for them in their back line, and her intercept marking this year has been exceptional. So I reckon the Kangaroos will get over the line, but geez, it'll be a good game.
It will indeed. Good on you, Kate. Thanks for your insights this morning.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Kate Sheehan from Fox Footy. So all the AFLW games are there, channel 504. You can hear the calls on SEN and SEN Plus and all of our network of stations. So there is a scenario for Melbourne, but it requires a 36-point swing in percentage. So about 5 goals. They'd have to belt Adelaide, which doesn't seem terribly likely. They probably will be left on the outside looking in with a record that should have seen them playing finals.